All right, so we've been going through, starting at the beginning of the year, we've been going through this book, The Buddhist Path to Awakening, this Gethin book. And really what we're going through, I think if I put it in the course now too, but there's, as you all know, there's many, many, many lists in the Dharma. And that can be kind of confusing and maybe even helpful. But there's a list, they're called the 36 Bodhijanggas, the 36 factors of awakening. There's about seven sets of lists in that one. And there's many places in the canon and certainly in the Abhidharma where the Buddha says, okay, these are the lists that matter. Like, don't worry about all these lists. Just focus on these seven. And so we've been going through those. We started right with right effort. So we're on still on right effort, which is the first list as it appears in the text. And today we're on the third great effort or the third right effort or the third. There's a lot of ways to think about it. Probably the best word is maybe endeavor or application. So the question becomes, how do we apply our minds? Effort's maybe not the best word because many people get in the meditation and they're already too much striving attitude. Like we try too hard. So sometimes effort, not the best word. Endeavor. What's the endeavor here? What's the overarching theme? And the overarching theme is actually quite simple: is that we're trying to prevent unwholesome mind states from arising. We're trying to overcome these unwholesome mind states when they've arisen. And the third one is we try to develop or cultivate wholesome mind states, and we try to maintain those. And that's in many ways the whole damn thing. So today's the third great effort, which is about developing or cultivating. Wholesome, we could say constructive, we could say skillful is maybe a good word. Basically trying to develop mind states, qualities of mind, attitude of minds that are conducive. So the kind of criteria is developing, cultivating mind states that are conducive to my happiness and my sense of contentment, but also to that of other people. Which is important to acknowledge because sometimes we can do things for our benefit at the cost of others. And we see plenty of this going on. So we have to realize that even right out of the gate, the Buddha is saying that what we do in our lives and our words and our actions and really what we do in our minds does impact other people. And so we want to bring some awareness to that. And so last week, I'll put the talks up too here when I get a chance, probably later today. Largely what we're trying to do in meditation is trying to go from the second to the third. So if I'm having a destructive mental state, whether it's jealousy or envy or greed or hatred or avarice or ill will, there's a whole bunch of them. When I recognize those are in my mind, how do I overcome those mind states or abandon those? And then how do I develop? So we're really trying to shift from two to three is a lot of times what's going on. And even if you sit for 30 minutes, you might even notice this transition happen a lot. Maybe you're caught up in some thinking around some fear, some anticipation about what's to come in the following week, and you're getting restless, irritable, and then you realize that that's not really what you want to be doing. And so you let that go, or you go back to your breath, or you make some kind of little adjustment. And that's kind of a big deal. This is not something that people generally try to do. So again, I think I always have to emphasize this. Don't undervalue or underemphasize the skills that you already have. So that's a key component of mind training is to recognize that the mind is engaged in some activity that doesn't serve us. And we recognize that and we say, okay, I'm not going to encourage that. I'm going to let that go. I'm going to overcome that. I'm going to be free from that in this moment. And I'm going to put my attention elsewhere. And you know, you do that in over a 20 or 30 minute meditation. And, you know, you probably do that 50 times, maybe more. So again, to have the mindfulness to see that this thing I'm talking about is something that you're doing probably with frequency, but you're maybe not tracking it or watching it, or maybe you're not contextualizing it in those terms. So it's good if we can get a sense of that too, because as we learn these lists and these concepts, a lot of them are so basic. A lot of these things that the Buddha is talking about are things that you're doing already anyway. Because I know a lot of times for me as a student, people, I'd hear a talk like this and I'm like, oh no, I gotta overcome these mind states and I gotta develop these good ones. And I forget that I'm already doing that already anyway. I just am not really contextualizing it, or I'm not acknowledging the little victories in the moments of the day when you're just like, You ever just be thinking about something, just thinking about it, and you finally give up? You're like, I'm over this, and you go do something else. That's good. That's what this is. So what are constructive or skillful mind states is the other question. So I think without a doubt that warrants a deal of conversation on mindfulness, because as much as the Dharma talks about, the Buddhist teachings talk about a lot of things other than mindfulness, and we can oftentimes get bogged down in the idea that mindfulness is the only thing that we need to have. Mindfulness essentially underpins and everything. So any Dharma practice, any Dharma activity that happens on the playing field of mindfulness. So without mindfulness, we might get lucky from time to time, but it's really the quintessential. Really, there's not going to be any other wholesome mental states without mindfulness. So mindfulness is considered to be an ethically positive, or even in the Abhidharma, they call it a beautiful mental factor. And this just, I don't want to go on this too long, but this is the great debate, certainly in the secular mindfulness world, and definitely in the insight Theravada world, is this ongoing debate, they'll never stop it, is that this question, that is mindfulness, is it ethically neutral? Is it, you know, is mindfulness a beautiful, skillful mental state? And there's varying degrees of opinions about that. I think the answer has to be yes. You know, I don't think you can mindfully harm people. I think something else is going on. Mindfulness and metta, loving kindness, friendliness, those states are integrated. So you can't really have one without the other. If there's metta, there's mindfulness. If there's mindfulness, there's metta. That's why I push this metta vipassana practice so much, is because those mental states, they're conjoined. They're both happening. And so mindfulness, the remembering part of mindfulness, this word sati, which is a poorly translated term and actually kind of a hard word to translate. The key term is remembering. And then the question becomes, well, remembering what? What am I supposed to be remembering if I have mindfulness? And so what the key part of that is, what we remember to recognize in any given moment is our integrity or our sila. Or when mindfulness is present in your mind, you are certainly in touch with your own sense of moral compass, for lack of a better word. That when mindfulness is present, your awareness and your acknowledgement and recognition of your own sense of right and wrong is very much present. And so when we have access to that kind of our sense of value, or our sense of integrity, it becomes a lot easier to do the right thing. It might be challenging, it might be counterintuitive, but it's what allows us to be able to go ahead and do that. And then so what happens in mindfulness that's so good, especially what the hindrance is, and with these, let's call them unskillful mental states, you can't really overcome a destructive mental state unless you are aware that you're in one. Does that make sense? Like, you're not going to do anything about jealousy until you realize that there's jealousy in my mind. And then I can assess for myself, this isn't really such a great thing to be encouraging. So without mindfulness, with these kind of mental states, these destructive mental states, they just kind of run around and run around and run around. Like when you're in aversion, the aversion never tells you that you're in aversion and that you probably shouldn't be. So this is why without mindfulness, we really don't have much of a fighting chance here. Without mindfulness, we just kind of, really what we do is we get lost in rumination, or we get lost in mental habituation. And so when mindfulness is present, it recognizes the quality of mind. I'm in a lot of aversion, I'm in a lot of ill will, I'm in a lot of restlessness, I'm in a lot of fear or anger or hatred, whatever the case may be. And mindfulness just says, well, you know, this is what's going on right now. And the question would become, do you want to fuel this? And this word fueling, I think, is a really important term. Usually this word fuel or khanda upadana, usually it's translated as clinging and grasping or attachment. So we hear lots about clinging, grasping, and attachment. But I think that doesn't quite work experientially, because that just means that I'm too much trying to get something, which is really only one side of the coin. So the question is, you know, if I'm lost in jealousy or ill will about something, am I really grasping? Maybe a little bit, but this word upadana has a double meaning in Pali, and the other meaning doesn't get the intention that it does, and it's the better translation, which is fueling. So I'm lost in jealousy, and I'm stoking that fire, you know, and so that's why they talk about the greed, hatred, and confusion as being the three fires. So it's not so much that I'm clinging to the mind state, it's that I'm supporting it. I'm you know, and this is actually right out of the discourse. The Buddha says that what we do is he talk about the sacrificial fires in the Brahmins and the Upanishads. He says your fires of greed, hatred, and confusion will continue to burn if you keep giving them the necessary fuel that they need. So we can fuel jealousy, we can fuel envy, we can fuel restlessness, we can fuel anger, we can fuel ill will, we can fuel all these things. Now, this was really helpful to me because the idea of clinging always never seemed to really, it always seemed to be a little bit thin when people talk about attachment, clinging, grasping. I mean, I'm capable of all three of those things, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't really quite encompass what's actually happening in those moments. When I started to look at it as fueling, first of all, it made me feel like I had more agency because I was like, well, I don't want to fuel this. So then I can start to recognize in which ways does one fuel these mind states. And usually they're fueled by the ways that, by our attitude of mind or by the kind of thinking that we're doing. And so Ajahn Sucitto, who I've sat with quite a bit, has this terminology that I like. He uses the word encourage. You know, you wake up to this mental state, you wake up with mindfulness, and the question goes, do I really want to encourage the state of mind that I'm in? You know, there's an attitude, there's kind of a not so good attitude, there's lots of, and so the thing about it that's so hard is what I'm being challenged with is like, am I going to take responsibility for my mind state right now, or am I going to be too preoccupied with the conditions that I'm in, and then I justify the mind state because the conditions that I'm in are unfavorable? And this is a really tough one to give up. Right, because a lot of times we think, well, I wouldn't feel this way if this wasn't happening. You know, when people get angry, I'm like, I wouldn't be angry with you if you didn't say what you said. If you just wouldn't say those fucking terrible words anymore, I wouldn't have this feeling. So it's actually your fault. So we get into that. You know, it's so easy to blame the conditions on your mind state. I mean, it's actually, I think, impossible to stop doing that. I think what we have to do is just to be aware of we're doing that and saying, okay, cool. Even if I'm right, so maybe it is the conditions. Let's just play it out in a court of law. Yes, the conditions are unfavorable and they shouldn't be happening. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, cool. So now I'm justified in my shitty mind state. Okay, cool. So that just means I'm going to, you know, like I'm not, it doesn't do me any good. So if you look at it from the global perspective, the whole thing is for shit. And really the only thing that you want to be able to do is to recognize the mind state and the quality of your own mind and make some kind of adjustment, which usually includes things like acceptance and recognition and maybe some forgiveness. It requires some things that aren't usually not accessible to us so quickly. Right? You know what I mean, right? You've been in these experiences. Yeah, it's not the conditions so much as it's my relationship to the conditions. So without mindfulness, none of this is ever going to happen. So when you look at like if you look at the awakening factors, which we'll get to those, the list of the awakening factors are in this list too, which is good. The seven facets that cause the mind to wake up, the first one is mindfulness. So I'll talk a little bit about the first two, because I think all the awakening factors are constructive mind states and they're supportive, but the mindfulness and then investigation or Dhamma Vachaya. Investigate's also kind of a strange word. It sounds like a CSI crime show every time I say that word, like I'm going to investigate my experience. But what it means is I'm going to, with mindfulness, I'm maybe the better word is I'm appraising the situation. I'm evaluating the situation, and probably what I'm doing is with mindfulness, I'm not just appraising, but I'm reappraising, I'm reevaluating. I'm trying to look at the circumstances and the conditions that I'm in over and over again until I can kind of land in a place where it's starting to feel a little bit more accurate, a little bit more doable. So when we find ourselves triggered by conditions, something happens in our life or something doesn't happen in our life, and we immediately get upset, and then the mind completely assaults the conditions, and with the fact, well, this shouldn't be happening, they shouldn't have done this, and they should have done, they said they were going to do this, and they didn't do it, and they fucking never do it when they say they're gonna, and we just kind of assault the conditions, right? And so we can stop and say, well, okay, like I need to relook at it. So there's another term, I forget the name of it, there's a Pali term where in meditation, what one of the things that we do is we repeatedly look at something. And so when we can look at a situation, take perspectives, look at it again and again, we usually can come up with some kind of assessment. We're like, okay, well, you know, this is life. This is how it is. People are like this. This goes on. Things don't always go my way. Sometimes things don't go my way. We really usually what we wake up to is a reality that the dukkha is there. You know, I'm not getting something that I wanted to happen all of a sudden not happening. Something that I really don't want to have happen is all of a sudden happening. Right? And it's, you know, it wasn't on my schedule. You know, I look at my schedule on my phone every day, and every single day there's usually four or five things that happen that aren't on my fucking little Apple phone calendar. Right? And I can get really irritated about that really quick. Right? And so I have to kind of, you know, do a lot of things. So at this point, maybe there's some mindfulness, there's probably some interest or some investigation, there's probably some adaptability. There's a whole, so once mindfulness is there, then we have access to all, well, we might have access to all these other mental states that actually will be helpful. But until the mindfulness factor arises in the mind, then you're probably just going to, maybe sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you're lost in some big destructive story and you pop out of it by dumb luck, but you don't want to count on that. That doesn't happen very often. You know, you get kicked out, you know. So when mindfulness is there, then we start to, this is why mindfulness, when we practice mindfulness as a sitted practice, we're cultivating mindfulness. So when we're developing and cultivating mindfulness, you could think to yourself, every time you sit, you are doing the practice of the third great effort. You are sitting down with the endeavor and the intention and the desire to develop a kind of awareness of experience in the present time. And that will be valuable to you. Does that make sense? So mindfulness and the third great effort are kind of really much the same thing. So as we go through these, you'll start to see how the lists converge. So the third great effort, the development of mental states, is also the beginning of the awakening factors, mindfulness, right? So we start to wake up, we start to develop this effort quality, and we start to have, we start to realize that we, you know, it's better for me. Even if the experience is unpleasant and challenging, it's better for me to be aware of what's going on and reappraise the situation. It's in my best interest to do so. So that practice is really, really valuable. So we'll do that here now. And so this will be the basic question, and I think this is a good practice. And really the question for the practice is just, is you know, they call it the mindfulness awakening factor. Is the mindfulness awakening factor present in my mind? Right? This is right straight out of the Satipatthana. Is the mindfulness awakening factor present in my mind? If it is, what can I do to continue it? If it's not, what can I do to establish it? Right? And the good trick is, as soon as you realize that mindfulness isn't present in your mind, it automatically switches on, because it takes mindfulness to do that little experiment. So a lot of times, you know, sometimes they call it awareness of awareness or mindfulness of the mind in the third foundation, but it's just really that, like, basic question, am I aware right now? Am I aware of my experience, or am I thinking about my experience or evaluating my experience or conceptualizing my experience? Those are very different things, but experientially they're very, very subtle. So we'll do this for maybe 15 minutes or so, and then we can talk about this further.